It's my pleasure to be able to introduce our speaker of the hour, who is a dear Holden friend. If you have not met her, she is Anna Cernak Niemeyer, aka Anna CN at Holden Village. And she has a very wonderful background in the subject of identity in community, and will be sharing information with us throughout the week. Please know that this session is being taped so that any conversation that takes place will be on the tape. You may choose to participate or not on that basis. Hope you will. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. Hi, everyone. I'm so happy to have you here. I was here in March at Holden doing an ally training, and I had more to share, and so I was invited back for this week to be teaching staff. And that same ally training is going to be offered on Friday, but this is a precursor to that, and also to the Vespers, as I mentioned, that we'll share tonight. So welcome. As Lori said, I'm Anna. You've seen me around the village, but probably in sort of a different capacity. I also get to be here as your teaching staff. So my hope is that during this time, we'll get to start some conversations, but then also know that I'm gonna be here for the rest of the week. So some of this stuff I've taught, you know, whole courses on, and we get 50 minutes. So part of what this time will look like is introducing some things, and then you're gonna have more questions and you're gonna wanna talk about it more. So part of what I'll ask before we get started is that there might be things that I'll ask us to put, as I call, in the parking lot. So if you have extra questions or want to take more time to discuss, we'll park it for this session, and then we can meet over a meal, or we can have a discussion after Vespers or throughout the week for the sense of time and to respect everybody's time. And there's also a session right after ours. So, welcome. Could we, just briefly, so that I can remember, could you do a quick first name around the room? We'll start right here.
Carl.
I'm Susan.
Mm-hmm. Rachel.
Danielle.
Margie.
Lori. Susan.
George.
Zach.
Sue.
Pauline.
Kent.
Jess.
Leah.
Sue.
Julie.
Hannah.
Anna.
Kelsey.
Owen.
Great. Well, welcome. So this time together is going to look, we have 50 minutes together, it's going to look like this. So part A is going to be more me talking, you'll be watching some video, you'll be seeing some images, and part B is going to be more experiential, where you'll get to do an activity together and discuss, and that will be your sending time. So I'm coming to this work through an experiential education background, which means that my goal is not for me to open up your brains, pour in information, close them, and send them on your way. Actually, there's a lot that you already know and that you've already experienced, and my hope is to build on top of that and to use your experience. So you're going to notice that in this time together. So we'll start thinking about why would we have conversations about identity and community in the first place. And I'll briefly reread the description. Then we're going to talk about a concept within identity studies called intersectionality, which maybe some of you have heard of, but we're going to see that illustrated in video, in comic form, in toy form, in sticker form. It's going to be great. So that's part A, where you'll be doing some receiving. And then part B, we'll have a short activity where you'll get to do some individual work and reflection, and then I'll send you and do a closing. So we have the next 40 minutes to do that together. So again, thanks for being here. I'm going to open this with a video so that you can learn more about me. I'm expecting and asking for you to share some of yourselves here. So it's only appropriate that I would share some of myself here and what my background is and where I'm coming from. So I work at St. Norbert College. It's a small Catholic liberal arts college in Wisconsin near Green Bay. And I work at an identity and inclusion center called the Cassandra Waugh Center, where I'm the assistant director. And the reason why I want to show you this video is not because I want you to be excited and impressed about the center itself, but the center is formed out of a story that is applicable for us together. why would we have conversations about identity and community? So it's about a 3-minute video that I invite you to watch with me.
I wanted to grab the light there.
The boss just finished her junior year, it seems.
What's that? We're going to grab the light so that you can see. Okay.
It was 2007. Cassandra Voss just finished her junior year at St. Olaf College. She was on top of the world, about to embark on a study abroad trip to South Africa.
She was very, very pleased and fulfilled and had big ideas and big plans for the future. Not specific ones necessarily, but general ones, and she was in the midst of figuring out what she was going
to
do.
But before she were to go overseas, Cassandra wanted to squeeze in one last trip with her friend and roommate. The roadmap was to drive to San Francisco and back, with stops in between. But in the middle of rural Nebraska, tragedy struck.
It was at 8:40 in the morning on May 21st, 2007. And that's when the accident occurred. And Cassie was killed on the scene, killed immediately.
Cassandra was 21 years old.
You know, this was God's will. For whatever reason, even though there's no way I could understand it, I was going to go from the premise that things do happen for a positive reason, and if I have to wait to find out what that reason is, I'll certainly do that.
Kurt's wait would last 6 years, but this is where the story comes full circle. You have a father, admittedly a conservative, who was able to find common ground with his feminist daughter, Cassandra.
She became such a spokesperson that she could out-debate a pretty good debater, her father, and teach her father in such a way that her father could know and understand.
A father's faith and determination, coupled with a daughter's dream, along with a number of amazing twists and turns along the way, has produced this. The Cassandra Voss Center, a former church built in 1883, that will house the Women's Center, the Men's Initiative, and the Women's and Gender Studies discipline.
She was my student and so beautiful in that her death is being turned into something extraordinary that will speak to people. Because we all want that. We all want to believe in transformation. And I can't believe that I'm a part of that.
Cassandra was on track to become the first St. Olaf student to complete an individualized major in Women's and Gender Studies. And she often spoke about a place on the St. Olaf campus that would welcome all gender-related programming.
It's often seen as things that we don't want to talk about. But I think when we do really intentional and strong programming, folks want to be in those spaces, and I think that's proven true on campus. And this will be an opportunity to really, really amplify those programs. And I think St. Olaf will be a leader in the entire state and country with this sort of work.
The Cassandra Voss Center is an innovative and unique facility, just like Cassandra would have envisioned it. Already, it's a space that has drawn one of the largest ever gift totals for gender programming at any college or university.
There's no doubt in my mind that God has very, very large plans for what's going to happen within those walls.
The dedication for the Cassandra Voss Center will be held on her birthday. She would have been 28 years old.
She'd buy a really great dress for the opening.
I think it's a story of faith. And, you know, God's been very faithful to me. You know, faith isn't a one-way street. It's a two-way street. And that's been proven to me through all the various things that have helped me to continue on with the path and for this project to come to fruition.
I'm Mike Keller reporting for St. Olaf College.
Here come the lights. So, this gives you a sense. Here you see one example of dialogue happening across difference. A conservative father, a progressive daughter, having conversations about identity that made a difference in their relationship and transformed both of them. And so what's at stake when we talk about identity and community is relationship across difference and dialogue across difference. And there's the potential, as you saw with Kurt, who is my friend now and who continues to be involved with the center, that there's potential for transformation that happens. You can also hear it a little bit in what he says. But if you're coming from a Christian perspective, this is also work that we're called to do in community, called by the gospel, to do dialogue across difference and to welcome the stranger. So that is some of the why. Why would we have this conversation in the context of Bolden? But also, all of you are familiar with there's a lot happening in our country right now. Lots of violence, but also lots of conversation. I feel like every day I go on the news, there's some big thing that's happening. Marriage equality. We're going to talk about Orlando and Charleston. There's lots happening in our country right now, and my hope is that this can be a conversation so that you can start to talk about what's going on in our lives here, and to be able to talk about and think about your own identity as well, which we'll do during the experiential activities. So I wonder, is it possible to get the lights back? So I'm curious, for those of you who are in the room, and we'll have you move around in a little bit, but who of you are familiar with this term here, intersectionality? How many of you have heard about it? In what context?
In context primarily with race initiatives and white ally work.
Okay, so white ally work and race initiatives. Who else? Can you keep your hands raised? How about for you?
Just kind of the point at which all your different identities meet to form yourself.
And through classes or through other work or just your reading you've
found
from concept?
Classes, reading.
Okay, great, thanks. How about other people? How did you come across the term?
Women and gender studies.
Women's and gender studies classes. How about you?
Reading, feminists of color.
Feminists of color readings.
Mm-hmm. From my daughter, who's 17 and started a young feminist group at our high school.
Great.
You told me about it.
So that's great. And so some people have some familiar, like other sessions, people are starting at different places. So for those of you for whom this is review, I would encourage you to think about these different resources as things that you could eventually share with other people. Think about what it would be like for you to be facilitating something like this. And for those of you for whom this is brand new, welcome. Everyone has a starting point, right? So again, I'm just going to read one more time the goal of this time together. And for us to think about how it relates to ourselves and to intersectionality to frame something that I'm about to show you. So, and I heard people talk about your kids, your classes, your activism work, and this is all related to this. Community fosters fellowship and vulnerability, encouraging interpersonal connection. Awesome, that's great. But open conversations about identity are difficult. You talk about the young feminist group. When I was living at Holden, we tried to start a young feminist group, but we didn't know where to start. And it was hard to know where to start. But conversations about identity are difficult, risky, and sometimes they just never happen. Many have never considered their own identity and maybe aren't trained to think about difference in terms of intersecting identities or elements like race, gender, class, sexuality, and ability and how they interact. But we can do it together, and you saw that Kirk did it. So again, we'll have multimedia time and experiential time. And so the main question is, how do our identities function in community and beyond? So as we transition into talking about intersectionality, I'm hoping this will come back up. I'm going to show you a resource that actually just came out last month from Teaching Tolerance, which is an education magazine out of the Southern Poverty Law Center, and an organization I've been fortunate to work with, Teaching Tolerance, as a blogger. And so they have put out this great resource for people to teach and learn about intersectionality. And for those of you who have been learning in classes, you may actually have not even seen this yet because it's brand new. So this is an introduction for us to be thinking about intersectionality, and I have multiple ways that we can think about it. But this is, again, about 3 minutes.
Intersectionality. Have you heard this word before? Even if you have, you might not know what it means. Let's take a look at it. The first part's easy enough. Intersection, a place where things come together. Intersectionality refers to the reality that we all have multiple identities that intersect to make us who we are. It also gives us a way to talk about oppressions and privileges that overlap and reinforce each other. This term dates back to the 1980s and legal scholar Kimberly Crenshaw. She noticed that we didn't have an effective way to talk about how the experiences of Black women are different from the experiences of Black men and of white women. How? Black women endure both gender discrimination and racial discrimination. Over the last 30 years, scholars, educators, and activists have expanded the use of the word intersectionality to talk about identity beyond race and gender. Let's few examples. Jerry has a disability, and his family lives below the poverty line. He is the oldest of 10, which requires him to do a lot of caregiving, and sometimes keeps him out of school. No one in the school counseling office has talked to Jerry or his parents about his plans for after graduation. He has applied for several jobs, but never gets called back. Fatima is Muslim and recently came to the United States from Somalia. She finds that many people at her school make assumptions about her values and abilities before they speak to her. Many of her classmates think she shouldn't be at their school at all. Greta comes from an affluent family. Both her parents and grandparents went to college, and her father owns a successful business. She doesn't think about her identity very often, but she does think of herself as someone who will go to college and get a good job once she graduates. Think about Greta's situation as opposed to Fatima's or Jerry's. Fatima and Jerry are members of marginalized groups. They don't get to choose whether or not to think about their identities. Greta, on the other hand, can ignore intersectionality if she wants to. Life isn't the same for everyone, even for people who share identity characteristics. By adopting an intersectional lens, we have a better opportunity to understand why and to change the institutions that help and harm us based on who we are. Want to learn more? Read our story, Teaching at the Intersections, in the summer 2016 issue of Teaching Tolerance magazine.
Claymation, I think, is one of the best ways to express intersectionality. So, right now what I'll ask you to do is, right after that video, if you could turn to your neighbor and share with that neighbor one thing that you reacted to or that struck you about this video so far. Go. Okay, I'm starting to hear a lull. If I could have two people share out what was, very briefly, one sentence, what struck you about this video?
What?
Briefly, in one sentence, what struck you about this video? If I could have two people that'd be willing to share out what you talked about in your group.
Well, first of all, that the white woman was described as not being marginalized, but she has a victim of gender bias.
Very keen, very keen. Laurie Branson. Who else? Other reactions, thoughts?
That the white woman, we liked it that that it was noted that white people can choose not to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of their privilege.
Mm-hmm. And may even never have had to think about it. It might not even be an active choice. It might be an inactive choice, just not having been introduced to it. Thank you. Thanks for your reaction. So, intersectionality is a term that is now, if you're going to do any identity studies work, any study about race, even starting with community, it's starting to become more mainstream. Kimberly Crenshaw continues to do work, especially with Say Her Name, which is working with Barack Obama to have funding for particularly black girls in education. So this is happening. This is right now. And when I was at a conference, I got to meet Kimberly Crenshaw, which was a nerd alert moment. If you're in women's and gender studies. So I want to think about intersectionality in a couple different ways, because you're going to be starting to think about this in terms of yourself. Let me pull this up. All right. So, I would have brought these with me, but I only had one backpack, so I thought maybe I better not bring a children's toy all the way to Holden Village. But this is one way we talk about this intersectionality. I'm going to give you a couple of ways, and maybe one will fit or latch on to. So if you think about how many of you have seen this like children's toy where you like pop the beads together in the tub and that kind of thing. Yeah. So if you think about this as the point of intersection, the person, we can see that, for instance, a part of their identity, like let's pretend that the orange jelly bean is race. So that's inseparable from that person, right? It's part of them, it informs their identity, and it's part of who they are. But so is gender, for instance. Let's say that this blue nodule is gender. So you're starting to see both of those. If I had them here, I'd pull on them and say, okay, they're both connected to this person. They're part of that person, but they're not the same thing. And they're not going to be the same for each person. You can start to see then how different identity categories would be connected to that person and will start to intersect at the point of that person and their identity. So here we've got the category of race and gender. Maybe class is starting to come into the picture. Then you can start to see that those interact with each other, add on to each other, and then you've got this great amalgam of a person. If you think about it in scientific terms, you could think about it as like, you know, when you're doing organic chemistry and you write the equation for that, and then it becomes this whole long string to make something new. So we're not going to talk about biology, but here this is an element, another way for you to think about intersectionality that is sometimes helpful. And when I talk about kids, it's helpful too, because they think about, okay, this is a toy that's accessible to me. So this is one other way to think about it. And finally, as we move on and get closer to our activity together, I have a little comic for you to read. So again, you can start to see this played out in different ways. People are getting creative for thinking about identity. So you can start to see them talk about organizing and community organizing. And Kimberly Crenshaw, when she first started talking about intersectionality, it was because she wanted to be able to describe, again, like you saw how the experiences of black women, or people who identified as black women, were different than those of black men from white women. And so when organizing has happened at Sons of Leia, you've done some community organizing, you can start to see that organizing sometimes happens around those identity categories. So you may start to organize at the point where you feel kind of the talons sinking into you. You're like, okay, well, I can understand that I experience oppression or marginalization because of this element of identity. But then what starts to happen is people who maybe cross over between those identities may have to start to choose a side or choose a place. So what's at stake with intersectionality is that we can each be our full selves. Who doesn't want to be their full self? To be able to connect with people across difference, to be able to find like-minded people, and even sometimes like-embodied people, and to be able to have conversations across difference so that there aren't these artificial divisions. We can start to see this playing out in our village. Holden Village, the guests and volunteers are primarily white folks who have an income that allows for them to be able to visit Holden Village and to be away for a week or a couple of months. We can see that maybe in some of the minor mediation workers or in the ESS workers, these are folks who may not have the opportunity to take a month out or take 2 weeks off. So they might be more working class. You could start to see that happen even physically. You can see the difference between Holden Village population and ESS or mine workers, right? So this is not happening out there somewhere. This is happening here in the village. And the more we're able to think about that, the more we can build community together. And in the Christian context, that looks like God's community, God's village. So we're going to transition now. And we can bring the lights back up to an activity that I will do with you. I would love to have some help for people to hand some things out for me. I could get little volunteers. So I'll give these to you, and then maybe I could give these to you to hand out as well. It's the same sheet. So this is an activity that I do frequently with my students, and every time I do it, it's different, so I'm going to do it with you, but once you get a hold of it, you can take a look at it. And also, each person is going to need one of each of these. So could I have your help passing out one of each of these to each person? Yes, so she's going to pass out one and you're going to pass one. So at the end, everybody will end up with two strips and a piece of paper. So at the end of this, you should be ending up with two strips and a piece of paper.
Two.
Yeah, so Danielle has a strip. Thanks. Danielle has a strip and Margie has a strip, and then you get a piece of paper. Okay, and I'm going to grab one because I get to play too. Thank you. Okay. So this activity is called the Identity Grid. It comes out of experiential education and social justice ed. I first came across it at the Wisconsin Women's Studies Conference, and it's one of my favorites. And I'll do this with you. So I'm going to ask you to follow along and not work ahead. We're going to do this activity together. This activity is a solo activity, so you will not be talking with other people while you're doing it. Part one is solo and part two is the reflection time. So you can choose to do this in your chair if you'd like to take time to move around and do someplace else, if it's more comfortable for you to sit, whatever you'd like to do. So I'm going to give you some directions. You'll be placing your stickers in different places on this identity grid, and then we'll have some time to unpack and reflect together. So thanks for following along. Okay, so here are some of the directions. You will be asked to look at the different colors, and I will go through them in progression and read them, and you'll place your stickers once I read them, so please don't work ahead. You'll have the opportunity to place both of your stickers in that color in different categories, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. So, for instance, if I were to, and you don't have to do this with me yet, for purple, the first one, the parts of my identity that I'm least aware of on a daily basis. So I'm going to grab my purple sticker, which is one of these circles. And again, please don't do this yet because I have some different directions for you. Parts of my identity that I'm least aware of on a daily basis. Okay, so I'm probably, on a daily basis, I'm least aware of probably my race and ethnicity because, as Daniel talked about, I don't, in many situations, I don't have to be. Or I'm not judged on that basis. And also, I'm probably least aware of my immigration status because it's something that I've always had and I don't have to be worried about being stopped. I have my citizenship papers. You'll notice that there's a category that says any other identity. And that's for you to be able to either think about or if you have a pen to fill in. If there's something, and if there's an identity category on here that you feel like is missing. So some people in the past have put things specific to them like abuse survivor, adopted, urban or rural, coming from a mixed family. So this is a category of your identity that's important to you. So I'm going to give you just a moment to think about what that might be for you. Something that's not already on there. Give me a thumbs up if you got it. Keep that thumb up.
What are we putting our thumbs up for?
Just if you've thought of that category, just so that I can gauge where people are at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see at least half of you have, so we're going to get started. Okay, so following along with me, and I've already placed it, but purple, these are the parts of my identity that I'm least aware of on a daily basis. Okay, so you're going to pick two boxes where you'd like to put that purple sticker. The parts of my identity that I am least aware of on a daily basis. This works best if you go with your first instinct. And again, this is just for you. You're not going to be asked to show this to people. This is just for you.
Use the circle.
Right? Yep, you got it. Yep, I know that this one was
kind
purple?
Of... Are these purple? Those are black?
These are purple, these are black, and the stars are blue. Good question. Okay. Thanks for clarifying. Other people, I'm sure, have that question too. So yeah, it's a purple circle. Again, your first instinct. The parts of my identity that I'm least aware of on a daily basis. I'm going to keep us clipping along. Okay. Next, and thanks for following along, the parts of my identity that I am most aware of on a daily basis.
Which sticker?
And that's the yellow sticker. And so things that I'm reading right now are also on your sheet. Good question. Good observations.
Use the brown thing.
What's that? Yep, so the yellow, you're going to have two yellow stickers. If you don't have two, then I'll have
the star.
Yep, the stars and the yellow. Yep.
You want us to use the stars or the circles?
The stars are the ones that are yellow. You got it. Here, grab this for you. Okay, so the stars go in the yellow stars go where you're most aware of on a daily basis. And they could go, by the way, in the same category. So I don't know why you'd be most aware of and least aware of the same thing, but you might be, but the other ones are gonna be more apparent. They may start to combine. Okay. So we're going to go to blue now, and it's going to be a blue star. The shapes don't matter, it's just the color. Blue, parts of my identity that were most emphasized or important in my family when growing up. Most emphasized or important in my family when growing up. So for instance, for me, if I am most aware of my faith on a daily basis, maybe that's also something that was emphasized in my family. So I might start to have a combination of stickers in one category. And that's okay. So blue star, the parts of my identity that were most emphasized or important in my family when growing up. And if you start to see multiple stickers in one box, that's okay. Good question. Herita just had a question. It's at the top, it says class or SES, social economic, socioeconomic status is another way people think about class. Okay. So you may start to see some combinations in different boxes, or maybe not. Okay, black. This is the parts of my identity that I wish I knew more about. Parts of my identity that I wish I knew more about.
What does that mean? It seems like each of these categories is just like a one word thing.
Sure, so if you wish you knew more about this part of yourself, like if...
Right, but I mean, like, it just seems sexual orientation, there's just like a one word answer for that's what this is, so there's nothing more to know about it, at least it seems to me.
So for you, that might not be the square that you would do. So, but if you're, that's a good question. So maybe you want to know more about, you want to think and talk more about your faith or religion, or maybe you want to think or talk more about your gender and what that entails for you, or maybe you want to think and talk and learn more about why you're at the class status you are. That's a good question. So for some people, you might have a definite answer. for how you identify in these areas, and some of you may not. Good question. Okay, so we're gonna go to brown now. It's gonna be a circle. The parts of my identity that I feel are difficult to discuss with those who identify differently. These are the parts of my identity that I feel are difficult to discuss with people who identify differently. Closing in on the end here, you may start to see some trends happening. Okay, we'll go to green. So these are the parts of my identity that give me the most privilege. So when we think and talk about privilege, that would look like advantages or unearned advantages that you were born with. Or Daniel talked about things that you don't have to think about, things that garner you something extra, make life easier. The parts of my identity that give me the most privilege. Okay, last one. Red, the parts of my identity that make me feel discriminated against. These are the parts of my identity that make me feel discriminated against. Okay, so what I'm going to ask you to do, so part one of this is coming to a close and we'll transition soon into part two. But first, what I would invite and ask you to do is to take a look at your grid. So you're done now placing stickers. You can put your little scrappies on the side, wherever, so they're not distracting to you. So take a look and observe your own grid. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to do that. Go ahead and read again the different colors, what they mean, try and remember that. Think about what you notice about that. I'll have some time to talk. Gather into groups of two or three when I say go. And go. And you can go anywhere you'd like in the room.
Smaller groups. Okay.
Okay. Okay. So we're going to keep clipping along so I have time to, we have time to reflect and I can give you some closing resources. All right, so among your neighbors and among your group members, give them a little fist bump, say, hey, group member.
Hey.
And then give them a little like this and say, thanks for sharing. Thanks for sharing. Okay. So the first thing that I invite you to talk about in your group, take a moment to think about and then share. Just simply, what did you notice about your group? the first thing for you to share. Well, just take a moment and think about this. What did you notice about where things landed? What was surprising to you? Just talk about what you noticed, and please be aware of how you're sharing airtime in your group, who's talking or why not. And go. What did you notice? And you don't necessarily have to share your grid with other people, but you can still talk about it if you feel comfortable. Okay, so I'm going to pull us back. I'm going to pull you back. You're going to say, stop pulling us back, Anna. We want to talk more. And I'm going to be like, great, that's the point. So could I get two people who would feel comfortable sharing in one sentence? To keep us kind of moving, what's one thing you noticed? What's one thing you noticed about your grid, Ingi?
I noticed that the parts of my identity that make me feel most discriminated against are the ones that I'm most aware of on a daily basis.
Okay, that's good. Snaps for Ingi. We're going to affirm her. Each person that speaks, we're going to affirm with snaps. So snap or little for Ingi. Thanks, Ingi. Okay, two more people. What did you notice? You're going to get snapped. It's going to be great.
Have my hair evenly distributed all over the page.
So Heritage talks about being evenly distributed across the page. Do you have a thought of why that could be or why it
could be? I know that because I'm an ordinary person, I saw that every box used to have one, and then I had some leftovers, you know.
Mm-hmm. Great. A little bit. Good to know about yourself. Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Snaps or pats for Heritage? Okay. One more person. What did you notice about your grid? Please.
Well, I noticed that the two things that my family thought and emphasized the most when we were growing up were also the parts of my identity that give me the most privilege.
Okay, so the things that were emphasized in your family when you were growing up were also the things that give you the most privilege. Snaps or pats for that. Thanks. Okay, next question. Were there particular squares where you had multiple colors or no colors? And what do you think that means for you? Again, I'll repeat it. You can think about it and then share in a group. Were there particular squares where you had multiple colors or no colors? And what did that mean for you? Go.
I like
Parts of the language are more about the gender, matched up with
was here, it was like, there's a part.
Okay, we're gonna pull it back. I'm gonna pull you back. I'm gonna throw you back in. So, I know some people didn't even get to say what they wanted to say. There's probably some metaphor in that too, I'm sure. So two people this time, what was intersecting for you and or not intersecting? Or what were the multiple colors that you had in one category? And what did you know, what did that mean for you? You initially raised your hand. Can I call on you now?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things is I had five boxes where I had nothing. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting to me in looking at it is at different points in my life, those would have been much higher.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, I mean, I thought about, but in terms of ranking,
sure,
those five are blank right now.
Mm-hmm.
I had the most in race, and I was sort of surprised that I had three in age, because mm-hmm. at my age now, that's a major thing I both contend with personally and how other people perceive me.
Sure. Very astute. So Leia's talking about how at different points in Leia's life, this chart may have looked different. And as I mentioned, I've been doing this for a while, and every time I do it, it looks different. So you're hitting on something, which is that context really matters with this. What elements of your identity become more salient, depending on context, whether that's time-bound, location-bound, what that looks like. How many other people notice that in theirs, that it would have looked different at different points in your life? Yeah. All right, snaps or taps. Okay, one more person. What kind of rose out of this for you in the end? Yeah, please.
Well, the empty boxes are the ones that I don't have to think about.
Okay. Would you be willing to share an example of that for yourself?
Well, sexual orientation, just because I'm hetero, normative, cisgender, like it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. So Danielle?
Yeah.
Thank you. So Danielle's talking about the fact that some of the boxes that were totally empty for her were the things that she didn't need to think about. And she used two words, heteronormative, meaning heterosexuality being perceived as a cultural norm, and cisgender, meaning essentially not transgender. Your bio sex matches your gender identity. If you want to learn more about that, come to the Alley training on Friday. So pats and snaps for Danny. Okay, as we close, one final question. There's so many good questions. Let me pick one that I think you'll like. Did you ever talk about these categories in your family? And if not, how did you know what was expected in these categories? So did you ever talk about these categories in your family? And if you didn't, how did you know what was expected of you, or what messages were sent to you about these categories? And if that was almost 50 years ago, how do you remember?
What did you say?
Leia said, if it's almost 50 years ago in your family, how do you remember? Okay. So the last question is, did you ever talk about these categories in your family? And if you didn't, how did you know what to expect, experience, how to act in these categories? Go.
Yes.
Yes. Talk in your group. Talk in your group.
I guess I was always told that I was American. You know, I grew up in the
I'm going to take a short break.
Okay, if there are people in your group that haven't gotten to talk yet throughout a lot of this, I'd invite you to do that now. If there's anyone that wants to say a final thing that you didn't get to sneak in. I guess the answer is no. Okay, well, let's bring it back then. So, two people, who would be willing to share thoughts about this question? What did you or did you not talk about in your family? And if you didn't, how did you know what to do in that category? Yes?
Education in my household was talked about all throughout me growing up. My parents just talked about how they wish they could continue college and stuff and wanted me and my siblings to excel. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, faith and religion have been a discussion in my family. Because we're all kind of in a transition time.
So education maybe in the context of class related to your family. And then also faith and religion, again, for you have been contextual. So more recently, you've started to talk about that. All right, Snapser, Kat. How about one other person we haven't heard from? What did you or did you not talk about in your family, and how did you, if you didn't talk about it, how did you know how to act in that category? Or maybe someone we have heard from?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, please.
Mm-hmm. So, as I was sharing, you know, the two things I remember were taught in the family were SES and
socioeconomic status
class. And, and gender. And those expectations were, they weren't necessarily talked about as much as modeled, and the expectation was very seriously ingrained. We were all girls. Beyond that, the learning beyond that was mainly through my sister and our conversations as family as I grew older. And so I value that. And, you know, that is, I think, where community comes in terms of friends as you evolve and are exploring alternatives to what you have been raised with or maybe questioned. So.
Thanks, snaps and claps for that. So you're starting to get to the crux of some great issues, which is that some people have talked about things in their family, some people haven't. There are gonna be alternate ways that you learn about these. And we could talk for a long time about how you learn about these identity categories. And some of them might be with found family or chosen family. So I'll invite you to take one turn because our time is coming to an end here. I invite you to continue this conversation at dinner for the rest of the week with people. With me, I'm going to be here for the rest. I'll be here all week. And with people that you maybe haven't had these conversations with before, I'm going to leave you with a resource that I think is both funny and helpful. And by the way, I have the intersectionality square and triangle. Thank you. I have 5 copies of that. Wanted to be a little more sustainable than to give you each one. And I have 5 copies of the resource that I'll share with you. So this is an idea about how to manage privilege. So I will read through it briefly and allow for you to also read along. So. Privilege refers to the uneven distribution of power within a society. It exists when the aspect of your life is seamlessly accepted into the world without scrutiny or suspicion. Personal privilege is the possession of these unearned attributes that dictate the ease and the influence that we'll have in society. Privilege is a fact, it's not an insult. You can't help if you have it, and you don't have to feel guilty about it. It's not absolute. Most people occupy multiple social positions, as you've seen in your identity grid, with multiple levels of privilege and disadvantage, sometimes even at different points in your life. Take me, for example. While I'm mentally ill, queer, and currently occupy a non-normative internal gender identity, I occupy several positions of privilege as well. I'm white. I pass as a cisgender, that's a term that Danielle brought up, cisgender woman. I'm able-bodied and without cognitive or intellectual impairments. My weight and height are acceptable socially, but this is not an exhaustive list. It's not the end-all, be-all. There are multiple aspects of identity. So if I want to be able to be responsible in the areas that I have privilege, how can I manage that? First of all, I shut up. I recognize that the privilege groups that I belong to have historically and currently been the ones that have dominated discussions, have taken up the most airtime, and have dictated the language and the environments and the ways that we talk about identity. I recognize that I don't always have to be heard at all times in those areas of privilege. And by insisting on my inclusion, I actually take the risk of reinforcing some harmful power dynamics. But if I do participate, I'm going to carefully watch myself to make sure that I don't hijack the discussion or take over the discussion. Two, I listen. I recognize that my experiences in privilege are considered normal, and that the experiences of people who don't belong to that privileged group are often silenced or ignored. I try to listen to those silenced and ignored experiences, even if it's hard, even if I don't like what's being said. The ability to ignore and to dismiss is part of my privilege, as you've mentioned before, Danielle, and I won't contribute to that legacy. I refuse to contribute to that perpetuation. Third, and there's five. Third, I educate myself. So I'm going to seek out resources, authorities, and dissenting opinions and alternate viewpoints on topics where I hold privilege. So I don't require members of underprivileged or disadvantaged groups to be responsible for educating me. I take the responsibility to educate myself. You're all taking the responsibility by being here. When I have a question, I'll make sure that I ask it at a time that's appropriate, not interrupting a person who might be speaking from their experience, and that I'm not making someone uncomfortable or upset. We're going to come back to that. I will not ask overly personal or intimate questions unless I know for sure that it's okay, or if you're a friend of that person. So here's an example. Hey, when you were talking back there, I heard you use a term to identify yourself that I hadn't heard before. Can I ask you a little bit more about that? Four of five. I use my privilege for good. Because social power dynamics have made my voice more important than other voices, I'm going to use that voice for good. I will speak up in my peer group when someone tells a racist joke or when I hear a slur of any kind. I will not tolerate discriminatory or disempowering behavior from the people around me. And I'm going to consider how the organizations and the groups that I belong to treat people that aren't privileged. And I'm going to make responsible decisions about whether to associate with those groups in light of how they've treated people. I'm going to opt in or opt out where it matters. I will always be careful not to speak for people, but I'll stand up for them whenever I can. That's important. Here's an example. Look, you're my friend. I know you're a kind, smart woman, but the jokes that you make and the words that you use when someone mentions immigration are just not cool. So can we talk about that? And finally, I will learn from screwing up. Repeat this after me. I will learn from screwing up.
I will learn from screwing up.
Again, I will learn from screwing up.
I will learn from screwing up.
My privilege has been internalized and reinforced my entire life. I will screw up sometimes. I will be thoughtless, I'll be misinformed, I'll be aggressive, I'll be unkind. I will listen when people call me out on that. I will listen when people call me out on that. And I'll figure out how I can avoid screwing up again. These personal guidelines help for me to make sure that privilege that I hold does more good than it does harm. And finally, hey, but whenever I try to talk, someone yells privilege at me. Some people may use the term privilege to bully or silence, but I would gently suggest that this happens more than people would like. When I feel attacked, I try to reflect on whether there's some truth behind it, even if the person could have been nicer about pointing it out. Sometimes the call out is disingenuous, but it never hurts to be a little self-critical. So with that, I thank you for this time together and for sharing of yourselves. I'm going to give you all some snaps. And again, I'll see you in Vespers tonight. And also for the LGBTQ ally training on Friday, this comic, there's five copies of that here, and there's the intersectionality comic here as well. Give yourselves a hand. Thank you.